There is more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the law of attraction. This is the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 45 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today, it's August 27th, 2016. How do you lose weight in an attractive universe? What if you want something to go away? Like fat, for instance. We know diets don't work. Is there some vibrational reason for this? Josh has written a new book. It's called The Joshua Diet. And this book explains how the whole subject of weight loss fits within the framework of physical reality. Finally, we have some information we can use that makes sense, and we'll talk about that on today's show. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Finizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
And Michael Cookson. Hi, Michael.
How are you doing, Gary?
Great. And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
Glad to have you guys.
Oh, wait a minute. I feel deprived. She got two.
Hi, Michael. Steve.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, Steve.
I just like Kyla's voice. Keep going there.
Yeah. Professional voice.
Actually,
have you guys heard?
She has a great radio voice.
She does. She has a great voice for radio and face for TV.
That's the right way to put it.
That's a good combination.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard the new Joshua meditation on abundance?
No.
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, you got to send one to Michael.
I will.
Kyla just finished it, and Kyla recorded it. Joshua wrote it. Kyla recorded it with music. It's really awesome. Lily and I just listened to that this morning, as we've been doing lately. It's really cool.
And I've been having a bunch of abundance come my way.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Financial abundance. It's just weird.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Not complaining.
You're going to put that on iTunes sometime, Steve?
It is actually very, very close as we speak.
Awesome. Okay, good. Yeah. So that'll be available on iTunes. Plus, there's a whole bunch of other ones. There's a Joy one that Kyla's partly done with that one. How far along are you on that one?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's complicated.
It is?
Okay. Yeah.
It's supposed to be joyful.
I know. And it is. That's part of it. Every time I record it, I start laughing at the part when it's at my core. I radiate joy because I'm feeling so much joy by that part.
Well, you can laugh. That's fine. That'll probably be good. And then there's a relationship one and a health one. Is there a health one?
Yep. And a worthiness.
And a worthiness one. There's five.
I could have used the health one this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was having, my back decided it didn't love me anymore.
Or you decided you didn't love your back anymore.
Yeah.
Or
you
decided something. You didn't love something anymore, and your back goes, hey.
Right. Well, you know what? I'm sure it was just plain old-fashioned stress that was creating a complete manifestation event for me.
Mm-hmm. I've been working totally on reducing stress. And I'm realizing that when you reduce the stress to a certain extent, you get bored, and then you want to go out and do something, and that something is likely to complicate things, which brings in a little bit more stress. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's any way to get around stress. I think stress is just something that is self-imposed, and no matter what's going on, by your resistance to what is, you feel stress. Mm-hmm. But I have a very stress-free life now.
Hmm.
But it gets a little more.
You really are like Jesus.
Like Jesus. No, don't say that.
Yeah. Just remember, John Lennon got into big trouble for saying that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus.
We are all Jesuses.
Yeah.
Right? We're all the Son of God. We're all unique. We're all worthy. We're all creative. We all have powers. What else?
And we're all having our records being burned down south?
If you have a Facebook account, you have followers.
Yeah. All right. We all have the potential to, like, live as our true selves here on Earth.
We are all working on becoming who we really are.
Yes.
Yep. We can all channel. We all have that ability to channel. Everyone can do it.
Yes.
I like to use the analogy that the ocean is God, and we're all little scoops of God out of the ocean.
Right.
Oh, I like that.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead.
As long as the scoop's not in the toilet bowl, it's great.
It's ocean water.
Yeah.
Okay. Clarification. Yes. I could take this a million different directions, but I think we want to get on with the show.
Let's go ahead and start the show off by doing the quote of the week, because this is going to head us in the right direction, I think.
Okay. You could not be more perfect. Your attention to what is wrong is the only cause of any perceived imperfection. That's it. It's simple.
That's it. It's simple. You are perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay, so no one thinks they're perfect because they always have this idea that they could be better, right?
Speak for yourself.
No one's perfect except for Steve. They're always better. Steve, are you perfect?
Yes.
Good. That was a trick question. But you are perfect now, and you are getting better. So you are an evolving being, but where you are right now is perfect. You have to start with that whole premise, which is, you know, an abstract thought, but if you can see how you're perfect and how everyone else is perfect exactly as they are, then it's easier to forgive them or to release your judgment on them or on yourself and to accept them as who they are.
That's one thing I've been going back to since the Joshua Live call on Wednesday, when I was beating myself up for yelling at my kids. And Joshua said, you can either be your like true enlightened self, or you can be the best version of yourself that's ever existed, which is what you are right now. And that brought me relief, because it made me feel better about not feeling like I wasn't perfect, but seeing that I am.
Yeah. And everyone is the highest version of themselves that have ever existed. And if you even think that this goes, you know, that you may have lived thousands of lifetimes before or millions of lifetimes, whatever it is, that you are improving and getting a higher vibration every step of the way. So you're the highest version of you that's ever existed since yesterday or since 10 years ago or since five lifetimes ago. You're always moving closer to who you really are. Mm. And you can see people who are still struggling. They're not close to who they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, it's an illusion anyway, because everyone is, you know, who everyone is can't be really seen by us, because our perception of them is clouded by our perception of us and the world around us. So everyone's doing their thing. We're doing our thing.
Right. Moments before the show began, I had a little annoyance with my in-laws, who were staying over with us for 3 weeks. I was actually doing a distance Reiki healing for somebody, and all of a sudden my father-in-law starts yelling, "Michael, Michael, you know, come here." And it's like, oh God. All right. What? and he says, "Your daughter, Caroline, she has a bag that needs to be repaired. Where is it?" And I said, "How would I know? What bag? I have no idea what you're talking about." And he says, "Well, she would know. She's asleep." And I said, "Yeah, so?" You know, again, getting more annoyed. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? "Well, she would know, but she's asleep." So, you know, I just, like, got it really annoyed. I rapped at the door for my daughter and said, "Caroline, what bag needs to be repaired? Grandma and Grandpa are going to take it for repairs." But I got annoyed with them saying, you know, "Hey, you know, why would I know? I work all kinds of crazy hours. I don't know one bag from another that my daughter has, nor would I, or where it is." And then I calmed down and I said, you know what? They're doing the best that they can do.
Right.
they're doing, you know, that's who they are. And, you know, to them, they thought, you know, that somehow I'm going to magically solve the problem.
Right.
But it's also one less thing that you have to worry about because they're taking the bag to get repaired instead of your daughter wanting you to do it.
Yeah, they're being helpful.
I don't see the problem here.
Well, yeah. No, it was just the timing.
No, obviously.
Did you have a sign on your door? You know, long distance Reiki healing in progress.
How about the term Reiki healing? How would they like that?
They wouldn't know what it is. B, they wouldn't read the sign anyway.
I like the part where your father-in-law says your daughter's name as if you weren't sure which daughter he was talking about since you only have one.
That's right. That's right. They have one granddaughter. Well, actually, they have three granddaughters, but two of them they don't speak to. So,
oh, God.
Wow.
They were actually disinvited from my brother-in-law's wedding 20-plus years ago, and they have never met their grandchildren on that side.
Well, and imagine here they are staying with you for 3 weeks, and here you have the chance to reunite the family because of your higher love and acceptance and vibration, right?
Well, that's not happening. But I have actually tried my best to be, you know, the Henry Kissinger engaging in shuttle diplomacy between my in-laws and my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law years and years ago, and that went nowhere fast, and it's been made clear to me it never will, so...
So it's interesting, too. Kate had a question, and Joshua had said that, you know, her mother called her at work in the middle of the day, and she's not allowed to, you know, she doesn't want her mother calling her because she's, you know, her boss is sitting right next to her, and she's supposed to be, you know, doing what she's doing. And so when her mother called, she was annoyed by it, and Joshua was, when you have that feeling of annoyance that somebody shouldn't be doing what they're doing – it is resistance to what is happening in the moment. Now, certainly, I get this all the time when my mother calls it at strange times as well. But what Joshua said was that there is some packet of information in that is meant for you. And that's this whole idea that everything's meant for you. But when you are annoyed with somebody or something happening, you are resisting it by thinking it's wrong. And so if you could somehow think that, okay, hold on, I'm in the middle of something, and here he's inspired to come in and say something to me in this tone that really grates on me, but what if there is something in there for me? And if you were to switch your attitude about it or your approach to it and look at it like, there's something here happening, and it's happening for me because I know that everything's happening for me. What is it? And if you could look at that from a perspective of curiosity, I wonder what would come from it. Because that's what Joshua says, that it's that specific thing that they're saying in that moment. I think, Kyla, you've had experience with this too.
Yeah.
That when something says something specific to you, you had to go back and figure out what that was.
Mm-hmm. You could take it a step further and ask yourself, why am I creating this?
Right. Why is this happening for me? Mm-hmm. And but you know, if you are being annoyed by it, or if you are, you know, trying to stop it or think it's wrong, then you're just missing that whole point of that.
I've started looking at it kind of like a game whenever something happens. There was a week right after I'd moved when my dog started peeing blood and my dishwasher broke and my washer broke, and it was just felt like all these things were going wrong. And so at first I was overwhelmed, and then I started trying to figure out, like, why is this, you know, how could this be happening for me? And so with the dog, I ended up finding this amazing vet, and they were able to board him for a couple days while I was out of town. And then the dishwasher, I don't know, the maintenance guy was pretty hot, so maybe that had something to do with it. And then the washer was just like a super easy fix, and so I think that was because I dealt with the other two okay. Though a guy came to look at the washer, and in 5 minutes he was out, and it was perfect. So,
and you can see how you're moving into a new place, so your vibration is getting up to speed with the new environment, and you see these little things going wrong, but you can have this idea that, oh, this isn't right. Look at this mess that's happening here. Or you get be like, okay, this is happening for a reason. Let's see what it is and see how easily things get fixed. you know, right. get back in line because you're vibrationally up to speed with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can see when one approach to that is that you can make it way more difficult for yourself or you can make it way easier for yourself depending on your attitude.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Well, so we got a question from – we get questions like this all the time about weight loss. And I used to be, before I met Lily, in absolutely perfect shape. I was, you know, I'm 6'3". I was 195 pounds. We went to the gym every day. This whole group of guys, we were working out all the time. And I was in the most amazing shape of my life when I met her. And then, you know, 20 years later, I'm in this different shape. And I like to be in the previous shape. And so how do you lose weight in an attractive environment? And so let's go ahead and talk about this question because I think a lot of it comes up as we're talking about the question.
Okay.
But Michael, let's just start with you first, though. You had said that you've lost weight in the last little while.
I have.
How'd you do
I've lost about 12 pounds in the past about 2 to 3 weeks.
Wow.
I weighed a little more than 160 pounds. I'm 5'7". I'm down to about 150, give or take, and a couple of ounces here or there. Past couple of weeks, if any of you remember who listened to the show, I complained wildly about something called the Bulletproof Diet not being right for me, that I had power diarrhea from it, et cetera, et cetera. What I did do was, you know, I basically modified it to what I needed. I wound up, for example, the guy Dave Osprey writes about, you know, that you shouldn't use soy or soy products because they have a lot of mold in them. But you know what? I need it for my stomach. It soothes my belly, and there's no way that I can have black coffee. It probably was the single, you know, that with the coconut milk, coconut oil, was probably what really, really set me off. So I modified it. I've been eating salads with the appropriate fats in it for lunch.
Avocados
I've been adding. I've been having it with olive oil and with apple cider vinegar. I've been really good about it. I've been eating eggs. I've been following it, you know, with the appropriate modifications because, you know, you've got to understand – anyone who's listened to this show for any length of time knows I'm a practicing attorney, so my time isn't always, you know, I don't have time to really go to a great length to modify diets or to fix foods or to stop what I'm doing during my day. So I do it to the extent that it makes sense in my life, and as a result, I've lost the weight.
I have a question for you. Were there internal changes that, like, preceded these inspirations to start eating these different foods or following this diet, making these modifications to the diet? You know what I mean?
Well, when you say internal changes, what do you mean by that?
Oh, in terms of like how you were viewing yourself, did you just set out and say, oh, I'm going to lose weight or?
It was a combination of things. Now I get what you're asking.
Right.
A combination of things. First of all, I had a little embarrassment at my daughter's graduation where I was wearing blue jeans. Everyone gave me a hard time about it. And my wife, you know, giving me a hard time said, well, why didn't you wear your short, you know, your nice shorts? I said, because I don't fit in them anymore. so that was a little, and I was getting to the point where certain things weren't fitting on me, but more importantly, or in part, I should say, because I've been working a lot this summer, it's been an extremely hectic summer. I just needed more energy. So a combination of things steered me towards doing something that would increase my energy levels and at the same time help me with some weight control.
So what's interesting from the diet book is that, as we know, everyone's unique. And so there is no diet or program that can work for all people. But what happens is when you get to understand how these forces work and realize that you really have to get to this place of feeling good. And then from that feeling good, you receive ideas and thoughts and inspiration to act. And so for me, I was noticing that, I had wanted to lose weight. And then I, for some reason, was on a PBS station and they were having that fat to lean diet guy on there.
Oh, eat fat, get lean.
Eat fat, get lean. And so a lot of that resonated with me. So we started, we got vitamin D3, the MCT coconut oil, probiotics, and cut out almost all bread and wheat, and white potatoes.
Right,
and
as rice. A buy.
Yeah. Right. And so now I'm like roasting vegetables and having, chicken on top of that. And then we're doing shakes. I'm doing shakes twice a day, that sort of thing too. But that works for me. And the thing is that you have to find what works for you by being inspired. So something will pop up, you'll overhear it. But if you like listen to us and say, well, I want to do that because it worked for those guys. Well, we're not you. So you have to find what works for you and you'll be inspired to work to find something. Like my friend Rob started taking up running and now is a triathlete and competes in triathlons. But I could never run. I'm not a runner. I've never liked running. I'll never run, but I'll walk and I'll ride my bike and I'll do those two things. But like if I was to go try and run, it would just be a painful nightmare and I would have to force myself to do it. And I would be doing something that's not fun in order to get some result that I wanted. And that just goes against every law in the universe. You have to be inspired to do something you like to do. And if you're starving yourself, that's not fun. And if you're, denying yourself certain things, that's not fun. So we're not denying ourselves anything. We're eating in a different way. And our whole idea around food has changed, Lily's and I. So now that it's sort of fun coming up with these really cool dinners or going to these cool restaurants that have things like this.
And what are you doing about beer and wine?
And that's my issue. I'm going to have to start smoking pot or something because the wine drinking, I really have this, I
don't know if that'll help the diet.
Yeah, that's what my friend said to me. I'm hungry. Well, maybe I'll smoke pot before dinner or something. I don't know. But it's a whole other thing, too, because I used to have sort of a stigma around smoking pot, thinking it was bad. And it's weird for me to think it's bad. I just never really got into it. But listening to Joe Rogan's podcast and understanding, that this is like the most natural thing in the world, and the drinking wine is probably the bad thing if you're going to judge anything.
Yeah. Alcohol is poison. You can't poison yourself with pot.
Right. And I think for me, one of the things in the Joshua Diet book is that you're supposed to try something by itself every day. And then you just, like say, a slice of bread. You just have that as a snack, quite a distance away from lunch and before dinner. And you have one thing. It could be a piece of steak. It could be a slice of bread. It could be a marshmallow. It could be just one thing. And then you feel what it feels like as you're eating it. And then, 15, 20 minutes later after you've digested it. And for me, I just cannot digest bread properly. I feel like it all turns to sugar. It sort of catches me in my throat. And I can't eat red meat either. I mean, I love red meat, but I can't. I feel a scratchiness in my throat and totally lethargic afterwards. So I cut those two things out, and now I have this energy that's unbelievable. So much more energy than I had before. And I think that helps results for me from D3 and the MCT oil and the probiotics as well. They did this study with mice where they took the flora out of the mice's stomach, the biotics makeup, all that stuff in the gut, and they gave it to it, put it in another mouse, and the other mouse took the same personality of the previous mouse. So there's so much stuff going on with that we're not aware of. So cultivating a healthy or a active, stuff in your gut too. It's interesting.
So wait a minute. If I want to be as enlightened as Gary Bodley, I can just take some stuff from your gut?
If you could get into my gut, you would be, You would just be joyous all the time.
Oh my God!
I should sell my
help with this broadcast. Everybody, we're going to grab Gary and sell off his parts. Kyle,
I'm happy with my parts.
You're happy with your parts. your young parts. They also are doing. I heard they're doing this thing where they're experimenting with taking the blood of young people and putting it into older people. And it sort of jump starts the whole hormone system and secretion creation. They've been doing it with animals now, and now they're starting to do it with humans.
Sounds like a movie.
I know. It is a movie, I think. I think it was a movie. Yeah. Okay, so that's cool. Let's go on to do this question. Who's going to read for Allison?
I will read for Allison.
Okay.
All right. Dear Joshua, I'm really enjoying Health, Wealth, and Love book. Sorry. Dear Joshua, I'm really enjoying Health, Wealth, and Love book. And today I've stumbled upon a line that has been repeated many times. I just keep getting stuck on it, and I'd love to move along. You've stated, the outside world will always match how you are feeling in your inner world. Trying to change something only causes you to focus your attention on the problem, which will then grow larger as a result. And I scream, yipes, and then feel so much frustration and negative emotion. I drill myself with questions and begin to point out all the wrongs of my world with the idea that on the inside, that is causing this or that. Would you share with us the best way to move through this? How do we accept that perhaps things are not the way we want them, and how to move to a focus of positive that will cause a change? Is it happy and joyful first, then manifestation? But maybe the question...
Okay, show over, everybody.
But maybe the question is how to identify the issue that is causing dissatisfaction. Then I worry about focusing on the negative instead of the positive. Round and round I go. For a time now, I've been worried about my weight, and I am constantly focusing on all the topics and points you've shared in your books. It's not the food, it's the beliefs. It's not this or that. So why am I gaining and focusing a lot on my disappointment in myself? How can I turn this around? And I will add now, I'm very angry at myself for not getting it from my reading. Tisk, tisk, Allison. Joshua, you've enlightened me beyond anything I could have imagined. I was born a believer in LOA. I picked a great family. And when I get stuck, well, I guess I'm stubborn. I'm ready to move on to the next level. I'd appreciate any enlightenment you might provide. Thank you in advance. Allison.
All right. This is the same problem everyone has. Same issue, you know. Things pop up in my reality that I don't like, and I'm wondering why this is happening. You know, why did I catch this cold? Why did the dishwasher break? Why did all these things happen? It must be something on the inside, so I want to fix the inside so things like this don't happen.
And right? Then they beat themselves up because they should know better.
Not doing it right. And the beating yourself up is the thing that causes these problems to happen anyway, probably.
We'll have to see what Joshua said.
Yeah. Okay, like Michael. Yes,
and this could just as easily have been addressed to me in terms of my back this week.
Yeah.
Dear Allison, the universe does not know good from bad, right or wrong. The universe only knows what you choose to focus on. It assumes that if you are constantly thinking about something, constantly talking about that subject, and constantly taking action to change the thing, you must really, really like it. And so the universe responds to what it believes is your request. Doesn't this make sense? In a reality where you attract all that you want, and you can push nothing away, wouldn't it be fair to assume that you would only think, talk about, and do things you liked?
So the idea of everything is right is that concept that a lot of people have a tough time with. But when you see it can be right, you are looking at the positive aspect of whatever it is, and you're not focused on the wrongness of it. The moment you focus on the wrongness of something, that's you start to attract that wrongness to it. The moment you focus on how something could be positive, you raise your vibration to another level, and you see things that are more positive. And so, because in the universe, there is no right and wrong. This came to me the other day. If a tree fell in the woods and no one was around to judge it, would it be bad? Right. It wouldn't. It would be just a tree falling in the woods. So if you don't have any judgment on anything, then nothing could be bad. It could, you know, it is what it is.
So that's very Zen.
That goes back to if a man speaks in the woods and there's not a woman there to hear him, is he still wrong?
Yes. Just kidding.
Carla said yes.
Yeah.
Right. I am exercising the better part of valor and not answering.
But I do want to point out the benefit of, for a small moment, focusing on the wrong. Because I think based on what Abraham says, that you launch an immediate rocket of what you do want in that moment.
Okay, so Abraham is focused on the rightness of seeing something is wrong.
Right. So she's saying that there is benefit to contrast, right? So
there's benefit to contrast.
That's a step.
Abraham would also say that you've put enough stuff, you know, in your you've birthed enough desires to last you for the next several lifetimes.
But dwelling on it past that moment does not serve you any greater. You've immediately launched what you want, so you might as well move on.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want people out there just beating themselves up, though, because they're...
Well, we're going to get into that part.
Okay.
I think.
Good. Right.
If not, we'll talk about that. Okay, Michael?
Well, unless they're masochists, but then that's between them and them.
Yeah. And that's something wanted, too.
That's what they want.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they want. Well, that's like that old joke, you know, a sadist and a masochist are together, and the masochist says, hit me, and the sadist says, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can't lose weight by hating the fat. The more you despise the fat, the more you will receive urges to take action, which will result in more fat. It cannot be helped. Generally, these urges come when you are in a lower emotional state of being, and they might help you to feel a bit better temporarily, but they do nothing to move you to where you want to go. Do you know where you want to go? Do you want to move away from fat or move toward a lean and healthy body? This is the most important thing you can ask yourself. You must know the answer. In an attractive universe, you cannot possibly move away from anything. All you can do is attract what is wanted.
Or, yeah. So it's an attractive universe, so how do you lose fat? Well, you have to desire a lean and attractive body, and still appreciate and love the body you have now in the process. You have to see yourself as perfect and focus on the perfection or the goodness or the good things, and things will improve based on you've already stated what you wanted.
I wanted to mention this earlier. I'll jump in again. The perfect thing for me was helped a lot when I used the analogy. When you look at a cloud in the sky, has it never not been perfect? Aren't clouds just always perfect? It's not like you look at it and go, God, if you know if that cloud just bulged out a little bit more right there, it'd be
right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's like it's always perfect, and no matter what it's doing. And that helped me to see the world more and people as perfect. Because
yeah.
I don't know how. Just saying.
I like it.
Okay. Good. Yep.
So what I thought about when I read this paragraph is, I think you've brought it up before, Gary, how people get nervous about loving themselves where they're at because they're afraid that that's going to bring more of that to them.
So this whole thing is counterintuitive. When you think that you should be loving yourself, well, if I love myself, then I won't change. I can only change the things I hate.
Right, like loving your job. You think you're going to be stuck there then.
Right. But what happens is you start to feel better about the job, and then then you'll get inspired to other actions, and maybe that job will turn into something that you actually love, or you'll, you know, be promoted to a new job, or you'll overhear someone, you know, in a new company or LinkedIn or whatever, and you'll be led to a job that you really like. But you can't get a better job by hating the job you hate, by hating the job you have.
Nope.
Yeah. Right.
So you can't get to anywhere by disliking what's existing right now.
Right, or if you hate the job and you do make a move, you'll just attract more of what you hate.
It'll be the same eventually. You'll be temporarily, you know, feeling better because you're out of that old situation, but that doesn't last very long. And soon the your thoughts create your reality and you're back in the same old place.
Right. Well, it's like the problems people have in relationships where they keep on being attracted to the thing that they say that they hate.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All the time. I had a friend who would start dating a new girl and just be totally infatuated with her and say, "This is the one," and in 2 weeks they'd be broken up because she did something bad, you know, or something happened, right? And it was always the same thing. So he never changed himself. He always went out and found a different girl, looking for the one girl that would be the one, rather than changing his whole focus on the inside.
I just met a girl who had been cheated on by her two husbands, and then she was talking about how the only men that she attracted were married men.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the proverbial "what goes around comes around."
Well, I mean, people cannot see what their thing is, but other people, you know, can see it. It's always like when Abraham has someone in the chair in the hot seat, the whole audience can understand the person's issue. The statement that Abraham's making makes perfect sense to everyone else except for the person in the hot seat. Just you can't see in yourself sometimes.
Yeah, they're too close to the situation.
Yeah.
I see that in me all the time.
I can see my relationship with food over the last 15 years now, and it just makes so much sense from where I am now, how I gained all that weight. But in the time, it didn't seem that way at all. Something about your beliefs gets so stuck.
Yep. Right. Well, sometimes I've used food as a comfort mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I'm having a bad day. I'm going for that pizza for lunch.
Exactly.
I'm going downstairs for a snack now. Yep. I'm going down. You know, I'm going to have a beer on the way home. I'm going to have my dinner and two desserts at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone does that to some extent, but for some people it's food, for some people it's alcohol, for some people it's cigarettes, for some people it's sex, you know, for some people it's video games. Video games seems to be the best because you can't gain weight in video games.
No, I think sex
video games
is the
worst.
Sex is the best because you can lose weight. Right. All right.
Okay. Hold on. I just lost the whole thing on my phone. Let me just pull it back. There we go. Okay. Okay. What is it you really want? Do you want to lose the weight so that you will feel good? Do you think that you'll feel better when you are thin? You won't. You don't manifest anything and then feel better. You feel better first, and the outer world responds to how you feel.
I think, Michael, you need to quit your job as a lawyer, and you need to do the audio for the books.
Real, why, thank you.
You're real good. Good job, Joshua.
You going to pay him $500 an hour or whatever his lawyer rate is?
Only if he can do the whole 4 books in 1 hour.
Yeah. That happens to be my hourly rate.
Yeah, I bet.
But then again, we pay huge rents and et cetera, et cetera.
You don't have to justify your exorbitant fees. You're worth every penny.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, I am.
There you go.
I believe it.
Okay. So, yeah. Everyone thinks that they want something so that they'll feel better. And once they get this thing, once they get this new car, new job, new mate, new body, new house, whatever, then I'll feel better. But what you want to do is feel better now and then be open to the new ideas and thoughts that are coming to you and follow the lead of those things when you're inspired to. And that's how you get everything you want.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can attest to that. Not with weight necessarily, but for a long time, I mean, growing up and then into part of my adulthood, like, I never really viewed myself as attractive. I was always the hot girl's best friend, you know? And I started just, like, practicing viewing myself that way, and nothing about my like actual physical appearance changed, but my attitude towards it changed. I started practicing my, I call it my sexy as fuck vibration. And sexy as fuck.
Which sounds like, sexy.
Sexy as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like,
oh, that's not what I thought you said.
Oh no.
I thought it was a sexy fox vibration.
Oh, no.
Sexy as fuck.
She's like, yeah, I'm sexy as fuck. You know?
Oh, and I thought she said sexiest fuck.
Oh, sexy as. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But anyways, back to my point. Like, and I just, like, I started being inspired to, I don't know, like, wear, do my makeup differently and, like, choose different clothes than I normally would, you know? And I've just had a, sort of had that reflected back to me by the outer world, that my own vibration that I'm putting out is being reflected back, so... Anyway.
Right. So you start with this idea that you are attractive, and then from that feeling of attractive, you're inspired to do things that will reflect in the outside world as well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, that's consistent with your feelings.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's consistent with your feelings. That's how it works. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And Kyla, for what it's worth, I thought I was the one who was the sexy woman's best friend. At least when I was in high school.
Friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The proverbial terrible. Friend zone.
Oh,
don't ever be
that.
Oh, he's so sensitive and nice.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That never leads anywhere.
You can be my best friend, Michael.
That's fine. I am happily married. I snagged my wife at a time when I wasn't in friend mode mood, and when I actually felt really, really hot and sexy.
There you go. That's how it works, man.
Yep. I was hot and sexy when I snagged my wife.
You still are.
Still are, yeah.
In high school, I was the chess club president, and I had glasses and braces. And
look at you now.
No woman would have anything to do with me, ever.
Now you're a stud.
Yeah.
I kept trying to tell myself that in the mirror.
God. It's nice that men get better looking when they get older.
And women do too.
And yes, women do too, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Too.
I'm not, but some men. Some women. Yeah.
I'm actually really happy with the fact that I've got salt and pepper hair at this point.
Yeah, me too.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wish I could grow a beard and goatee like Steve. Rugged, handsome right there.
You just got to
start practicing.
You just got to not shave.
Your vibration.
If I don't shave, I'll have three hairs. They're like 4 feet long.
That's a unique look. That's true. Yeah.
You just got to just love up on those three or four hairs, and maybe they'll multiply.
I'm spending all my time loving the hair on my head.
So yeah. The three hair beard. It sounds like something right out of Star Wars.
Oh. Yep. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Okay.
I like this stuff a lot.
Okay. You might think that if you learn to love the body you now have, it will remain the same. You might think that the only way to a better body is by noticing and taking care of the flaws you find. You must be on alert so that you can notice all the flaws and find ways to change them. But you can't change your outer world because you do not like it. You must change your inner world first.
Okay. So it's a counterintuitive thing there. Okay, go to the next one.
Let's take an example of a real estate developer. Is this you, Gary?
Yeah, what a coincidence.
Okay. He does not look at an ugly skyline and try to improve it by building a new high-rise. He sees a beautiful skyline and wants to add to it and improve it by building a beautiful building. You want to add to the beauty of who you are right now, and in doing that, you will make it easier to feel good about yourself. When you feel good, you are open to good feeling thoughts and ideas. You will be open to inspiration, and you will be inspired to take beneficial action at the right time.
Well, that does relate to me at some point, because in fixing up houses, I don't think that I'm you know, going into an ugly neighborhood and making the neighborhood better by making this house better. I'm going into a beautiful neighborhood and this house sort of stands out, and I'm adding to the beauty of the neighborhood by making this house as beautiful as or more so than the rest of the houses of the neighborhood. So it's coming from a place where this is a great neighborhood. It would be even better if this house was like the star of it all.
But do you think? But do you think most real estate developers actually go at it with that attitude?
I think the successful ones do, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the people who fail are the ones who are trying to fix a problem instead of add to the perfection of what is.
Interesting.
I would say Trump would definitely say that he adds to the skyline. Here in West Palm and in New York City and all over the place, he adds to the beauty of the area. He's the Trump Golf Course here is one of the most beautiful golf courses in the area. He's got Trump Tower condos here that are like the focal point of downtown. So I think he goes into it saying, "I'm going to make this place even better than it is."
Well, it's interesting because in the 70s and 80s in New York, they had, you know, one of the big problem areas, or was perceived to be a problem area, was the Times Square area. Times Square in the 70s and 80s, if you ever watched Taxi Driver, or
I was there all the time.
You know, it was, you know, it was a crime ridden, drug ridden, porn area.
Well, it's sort of how you look at it, because I think a lot of New Yorkers would prefer the Times Square of the 70s to the Times Square that you have now.
Oh, I don't think so. I think
it's Disney World now. It has none of the character and the grit of New York City.
Well,
it's
it
like
had
literally being in the middle of Disneyland.
Well, it had a lot of character and grit. It also had a tremendous amount of crime. You didn't dare walk through there.
I was walking through there as a kid by myself, 13 years old, all the time. There was an arcade there that I went to almost every day. My mother worked at the Big Apple Circus, two blocks down from Times Square.
You can walk through any crime area as long as your vibration is.
Yep. I took the subway home in New York City in the 70s at 3 in the morning all the time. As a 13, 14, 15-year-older. Never had a problem. One problem I had was when I was taking a cab home and the cabbie fell asleep. I was like, wake up! Driving 50 miles an hour through Manhattan. But yeah, you know, it's all about...
But I think those
you have at the time,
right? But I think the whole point was that I went off a little bit on was the fact that there was the idea that they were going that this was or had become an ugly area, and to revitalize it and to change the area. I don't think it was that this is a beautiful area now, or at least I don't think that's what they were. You know, I can't get into their heads, but I don't think that's quite what they're thinking.
I would bet you that they're thinking that New York City is the greatest city in the world, and that New York City deserves a beautiful building in this area, and this will enhance all of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't saying this is a bad area. I mean, even Times Square might have been bad compared to a lot of other areas, but you could still say that about so many parts of New York City at the time too. They didn't take the skyline and put it in Hoboken, you know, the building in Hoboken, or in what's the airport in New Jersey?
Newark.
They didn't build the building in Newark,
Liberty.
Right? They built it in Manhattan because Manhattan's Manhattan. Even if that was a little run down, it was still better than Newark.
Right.
But anyway, that's the point that Josh was making here.
All right. And by the way, I like Times Square much better as it is today. All right. In any event, should I keep going?
No. Yeah.
No. Okay. Cuts in, you communist. You like Disney World. We know it seems counterintuitive, but the only way to move to an improved condition is to love and appreciate the present condition. It works like this in all areas of your life. Find something to appreciate about yourself and focus on that. Look for the positive aspects and smile about them. Feel good, and you will be tuned to a good-feeling reality that will provide you with the inspiration to act in ways that will slowly cause things to get better and better.
So it's the feeling good part is the main thing, is that if you're, you know, feeling bad about your body, or if you're feeling bad about the snack that you just had, you're dipping into these low vibrational points of being, state of being, and from there you just don't have the ability to attract the higher vibrational thoughts and ideas. But you spend a little time feeling good, and you'll notice that these new ideas come to you. And it's sort of a momentum, too, because now that we're eating this way, I look at eating the other way as, you know, just not for me. It just wasn't working for me. There wasn't really anything good about it. Like, I used to love French fries, but now I see French fries as, like, this thing that takes me away from everything that I want. I have a whole different attitude about French fries now.
I love French fries.
Oh, I love French fries, too.
French fries are so good, but they're so bad for you.
No, oh. They're not that they're bad for Steve. They're just taking me away from what I want, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I might get the urge to have French fries, but I know that that urge comes from a low emotional state of being. I know that, you know, if I lose a poker tournament, I've got to be really careful about what I'm going to do, because I know that I'll get urges to do something that might take me off what I want to do. You know, my attitude and my whole, you know, being upset causes me to, you know, want to say things or do things that aren't, you know, leading me towards where I want to go. So I just have to be focused on what I really want and realize that those urges are only there to help me feel a little bit better in the moment, but don't do anything towards my real desire of being lean and healthy.
So what, you know, so let's take that a step further. When you lose a poker tournament, the rare times that happens, what do you do?
So I usually come home and get into my passion or into another passion. So I'll either come home and edit a Joshua book, answer a question, or cook. I do a lot of cooking, or I usually go to the grocery store and get stuff for dinner. And then, you know, I'll get into something else that I'm interested in. I'll often go to Lily's store and help her do stuff there, be around her, that sort of thing. But I, you know, don't stop at Taco Bell on the way home.
Hey.
You know, I love Taco Bell, but I'm just saying.
Meow, meow, meow.
My father had an uncle in the old country in Italy. He said he lived to be in his 90s, and apparently his diet subsisted of eating fatback, which I guess is like a bacon or something, smoking cigarettes and wine. And that was like 90% of his diet.
Yeah, but so, he had this great attitude.
Yes, that's why I'm trying to set it.
He had no stress, right.
How do you feel about the food that you're eating?
And, right.
And are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah, it's the whole French paradox.
Which is?
What's that?
Which is that they eat more fat than any other nation, more rich foods, yet they have, until recently anyway, had the lowest cases of heart disease and obesity of anyone.
Oh.
It was the French paradox. They drank alcohol with lunch and dinner, that sort of thing. And then they had the study that was on 60 Minutes about wine being beneficial and actually all alcohol being beneficial. It was I think it was nurses that they did over – they followed them over 40 or 50 years and found that those nurses that drank – red wine being the best, but they all had benefits no matter what they were drinking over people who did not drink at all. And I wondered, and I'll bet you it's not per se the alcohol, but it's the attitude that, you know, a glass of wine will relax me, it'll reduce stress, or maybe just the people that are predisposed to drinking alcohol are those people that are more or less stressed out in their lives. Or more relaxed or easygoing, I would say.
I think it's all attitude.
It's all attitude. Now, here's a paradox. Lily's mother lived to be almost 90, was in perfect health her whole life until the very, very, very end. Smoked tons of cigarettes, I would say 3 packs a day. Drank like a sailor on shore leave every single day of her life. And had a terrible attitude and completely worried about money and everything else her whole entire life, and she lived perfectly healthy the whole time.
Yeah, but she probably didn't worry about her health.
She had never worried about her health.
She had good beliefs about her health.
So. Yeah, she did. She did. And she had really good Italian genes.
Sergio Valente's? Okay, am I dating myself?
I was almost going to say that.
Am I dating myself with that reference? Okay.
Yeah. But I was like, I couldn't think of an Italian gene, though. That was very good.
I just had to Google that. I didn't have any idea.
I would have said Calvin Klein or something, but that's not Italian.
He's definitely Italian.
That was a good one. Okay, the last one.
Okay. But you cannot do any of this with the intention of losing weight. You must accept what you look like now as perfect. Feel good now. This is your only choice. You know feeling bad does not do anything to help you. Feeling bad attracts urges which work against you. Feeling bad leads to other unwanted manifestations. Feel good for who you are, what you have, and the lovely and wonderful shape of your beautiful body as it exists now, and everything will get better and better and better and better. With all our love, we are Joshua.
That was applause.
I thought it was a seal asking for herring.
Crickets.
Crickets.
You know, you can't win them all.
You throw enough stuff on the fridge and some of it sticks, right?
What's that? Right. Yep. Well, or yes, or poopy against the wall, yes.
Yeah, there we go. Good. All right. So do we all have it now?
Yeah.
This is really the summation of what the Joshua Diet book is about. The book is long, though. It's 200 pages or 250 pages. And then it will have this workbook that goes along with it. So in this workbook, you have to – it's like two full pages of stuff that you do every day, and you do it for 13 weeks. Mm. And so a lot of it is affirmations, appreciation, gratitude, intentions. You have to set intentions before every day. And – you experiment with one item of food every day. You have to meditate during the day, that sort of thing. So it's going to be pretty interesting. There's some other stuff that goes to it, too. We're not done yet.
And when can we expect this?
You can expect it like how the other books come out, you know, in a few years. Sometime within the next few years. I'm hoping. That fun part for me is the editing part, because it goes to two proofreaders, then I come back and have to manually make the changes in – most of it is commas and maybe semicolons and spelling errors. And
maybe you could
is there
find
somebody that could – yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Find the right perfect person who could do that for you.
And that is absolutely true. I'm sure there is somebody perfect who could do it for me. But ultimately, it's something I'm still going to have to do no matter how – I can't just give it to someone and then not review it. It's still something I'm going to have to do the work on.
Sounds like you have trust issues.
Yeah.
I'm hearing some limiting beliefs in there.
Yeah, there's limiting beliefs that it has to be perfect or it won't be taken seriously.
Yeah, but you're saying it might not be perfect after this person, this right and perfect person, does it? So,
yeah.
It's okay, we can work on that. We can work on that later.
Right. And so there's a fear there that, there's a lot of fears. I'm human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're still alive.
Yeah. But anyway.
But you're perfect. So that's exactly.
And then somehow this workbook has to be designed. And that I can send over to someone, to a designer to do it. Just the first few pages have to be done so that they can pretty much repeat the whole thing within the rest of the 13 weeks it needs to be. So 7 days times 13. 7 times 13 times – if it's on 2 pages, it's 182 pages. So it might be even 3 pages a day for this stuff. It'll be interesting because, you know, the one huge issue is that diets don't work because you get inspired to be on this diet, you lose the weight, so you're changing the conditions on the outside, and then you start feeling the same, and then the outside conditions start to reflect how you feel again, and you gain the weight back. Mm. Right? That's how pretty much... There's not like a diet that has ever been like, okay, 1,000 people went on this diet and 95% of them had lost the weight 5 years later. There's not one diet in existence that's ever been anywhere near that. Even 10% of the people would be a remarkable success if they kept it. And that's because one, diet can't work for everyone, and two, you got to fix your, you know, how you feel inside first. You got to adapt that vibration of a lean and healthy person, and then your outside will reflect that.
Yeah, I would argue that you could have a bacon diet, and as long as you had the right attitude, it would work perfect.
Right. Absolutely.
Actually, that probably would work as long as you get some vitamins in.
That's just the belief.
That is the belief.
But you have to work. You have to find a diet that works within your set of beliefs or alter your beliefs. One of the two things has to change, right?
Yeah.
It's probably easier for people to figure out something that's going to work within their current set of beliefs because beliefs are a little more difficult to change.
That's another belief.
That's another belief? That's why John said, keep your beliefs as open as possible.
Yes.
We are seriously into paradox today.
Mm-hmm. We are going against the grain of what we've been taught our whole lives.
Yeah.
Yep. Everything we thought we knew is not the way it seems.
Right. I remember the nutrition pyramid. That's what they used to teach us in school.
I remember being taught that eggs were bad and now being taught that eggs are really good for you.
Right.
In fact, this whole idea of cholesterol is all warped. Yeah. You know?
Right.
And fat, for that matter.
And probably calories, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I've been tested and I've had high cholesterol. And at one point I was on Lipitor and I was on my lipids. And at the end of the day, every time they test my heart's fine.
Yeah.
So... You know, so the correlation really is, you know, is only a very loose correlation at best.
Everything is a loose correlation, yeah. My dad is on, I would say, 30 different prescription drugs. And if you can imagine just trying to calculate the combination of three drugs, what that could do to you. Nobody could even – how are you even going to do a double-blind placebo study with a combination of three drugs, let alone 30 drugs?
Right.
They don't know what's going to happen to him, you know, what the side effects and the interactions are of all these things. And all they're trying to do is solve these symptoms. So he'll come up and he'll say that he has a symptom, or he'll take this test and he'll say he has a symptom like, you know, high triglycerides or whatever. And they'll say, okay, we're going to treat that symptom, not the cause of the symptom, not his perpetual, you know.
Here, this might
lifestyle.
Help.
Yeah. You say, we're going to fix this problem by changing the conditions on the outside rather than have you meditate or, you know, whatever else it is, or smoke pot, or, you know, understand your worthiness.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, probably the answer is all of the above.
Or feel good. Yeah. Right. If you could just help the person feel good, then they could get inspired to do things to keep them feeling good.
So do you just, like, observe that, or do you try to enlighten him at all? My mom is the same way. She's always got something new that's going on, and she's going to see a new doctor for this or that. And I try to just let her be. Let her do her thing, but I feel like... it could be so much easier, you know?
Well, I had somehow in my email got this book sent about curing Alzheimer's with a natural way, right? Mm. And he had just was in a, he was in a drive-thru at Burger King. And he hit the gas instead of the brake and bumped into the person in front of him. Oh, and he couldn't remember which was the gas and which was the brake. So there's a senior moment here, right? And what that is, they're saying now, is that the body is not able to absorb the right nutrients anymore, and it's specifically fats. And so the brain is not getting the fats it needs, the proper fats. And so it is starving. And this is when, you know, senior moments happen, I guess. So anyway, it came the day after he said that, so I bought the book for him, and I'm going to give him some MCT oil, and I'll give it to him, and we'll see what happens. But, yeah, so, you know, it's sort of like I was inspired to do that for him, and maybe this is part of that whole thing. Right. And generally, it's funny because he's really changed his diet a lot lately. But he still is not, into, you know, feeling good about himself. So the more he does that, I think the better off he'll be. Hi, Dad, if you're listening to this, we're talking about it.
Right, yeah. but at the same time, there is a very important role for medicine. I think it's all got to be combined.
That, by the way, was a surprise for my dad, so I have to get over there and get him before we send out this podcast.
Yeah,
wrap everything up for him. I'll do that today.
I've heard that the witch doctors were actually slightly more successful than today's medicine because the belief that the people had in the witch doctors was so strong that their healing worked. And today, it's the same thing. It's how much faith you have in your doctor when you go and you get this medicine. So it's very important to believe that it is going to work.
More and more people believe less because it's just a lot of things aren't working. There was one surgeon who just came on and said that if you really look at the efficacy, effectiveness of surgeries over the long term, that they end up doing more harm than good. So there's a bunch of things that we believe about the medical system that is probably not true.
I just don't go to the doctors. The only reason I would go is if I broke something.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't go.
Well, I'll tell you, I had my gallbladder taken out a few years ago, and I was in dire pain, and afterwards I have not been, so I'm very happy.
Hey, that's a perfect thing. A appendix or a gallbladder or some kind of surgery like that, that's critical.
Yeah, seeking relief. That's what I would call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having my family watch me screaming in agony on the floor in the house is not my idea of a good time.
Yeah. And at that point, the momentum has transpired and kept going so long that you can't just turn it around by anything other than surgery, I would say. It's not... It's like what Abraham says, now that you've fallen out of the airplane.
Without a parachute.
And you ask, Abraham, what should I do?
Just wait a little while. It'll be over soon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, you guys. This has been a really fun and interesting conversation. It is awesome to talk to you guys. Like-minded people. About all things and our own limiting beliefs about it, too.
Yeah.
This is always fun.
If you can think of anything else to talk about on the next show, it's funny how these shows work. Something just pops up in the middle of the week, and then that's the show. And I don't think we've really repeated anything. This is our 44th show. And in 44 shows, there's always something new to talk about. So if you... Anyone listening out there, or if you guys on the round table have an idea, let me know. Ask Josh a question. That's the best way because we can read the answer. And until next week, I hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.